If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome to the Voice Over Work podcast, an eclectic collection of motivational thoughts, news stories, and research from some of the newest audiobooks on the market. This podcast is brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. I'm your host, Russell Newton. Thanks for listening today and hope you're doing well. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at Outsmart Your Brain, written by Steven Schuster, narrated by Russell Newton. Chapter 1, What is Behavioral Economics? As we've already mentioned, behavioral economics combines psychology, economics, and neuroscience to predict and describe decision-making behaviors. There were two problems that drove the creation of the field: whether the underlying principles of economics, utility and profit, are actual drivers of human behavior, and whether people always work to maximize the utility they gain from their decisions. Utility here approximately means benefits. Mostly, it works to expand the parameters of economic behavior from just money and labor to things like time and pleasure. The ideal person, at least according to an economist, would always make decisions that will result in them gaining the most utility. This ideal is called rational choice theory, which is defined as the theory that people will always make the choice that maximizes their own individual satisfaction when given different options under scarcity. Scarcity here means that there is a limited quantity of goods, which, since we live on a planet with finite resources, is always true in real life. The best choices, which are the ones that lead to the best outcomes, should therefore come from a prediction of which choice would provide the best utility. The ideal rational decision maker would be so consistent in being able to carry out this process that we would be able to create a mathematical model that successfully predicts their decisions based on utility. This would entail a complete lack of emotions, biases, or external influences. Of course, no person like this actually exists, which is where behavioral economics comes in. The science of behavioral economics has become particularly relevant in recent years in the aftermath. Chapter 2, Reference Dependence. Reference dependence is one of the core principles of behavioral economics. It was developed by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky in their work on prospect theory, which deals with the reference points mentioned in the last chapter and how people classify their outcomes based on them. Prospect theory helps explain other human behavioral phenomena, such as loss avoidance. As you might guess, therefore, reference dependence is a widely applicable concept. It can apply to anything related to risk evaluation in decision-making. People tend to make choices about what to do based on what they already know, and their decisions can vary even if the circumstances are exactly the same. For example, although two different people could come to the edge of a crosswalk at the exact same time while the "don't walk" sign is flashing, one person might decide to go for it and cross because of their prior knowledge of how fast they can make it, while the other person might not because of their knowledge that they cannot move fast enough. The two people made different choices because of their different reference points. It's fairly easy to intuit that different people have different priorities and that these differences influence decision making. It might be intuitive that people base the value they anticipate on pleasure, both prior and possible, but our brains aren't actually wired for this to be the priority. Instead, our dopamine receptors are actually linked to our brain's reward center. We thus respond to our brain's information about rewards that have happened and could still happen. We can think of value as the information our brains process about our experience and perception of rewards. This evaluation of reward goes into every decision we make. Chapter 3, Economic Implications of Reference Dependence. Another key theory of behavioral economics, for which Daniel Kahneman won the 2002 Nobel Prize in Economics, is prospect theory. You might remember that economic models tend to be designed to describe what people should do. Prospect theory describes what they actually will do. Basically, prospect theory is that people decide which choice to make based on the potential net value, the sum of positive and negative value, rather than on the actual outcomes, and that they use some sort of logical system or heuristic to determine this. Economics tends to presuppose that people already know which choice is better for them, that they'll choose to place their money in a savings account instead of play small odds at a casino to double it. But prospect theory allows for what many people do in real life, which is choose the gamble because of the net value. Prospect theory adapts to the way our brains actually work. Prospect theory relies on reference dependence and probability weighting. We'll talk about probability weighting in the next chapter, so for now, let's focus in more on reference dependence. In the previous chapter, we went over a broad definition and then the neurochemical underpinnings of reference dependence. Here, we will discuss its economic and behavioral implications in more detail. Reference dependence causes a lot of our major biases, but it can also help us make good decisions. It's always important to remember that our brains are wired the way they are for a reason, and that this reason is generally to help us survive and continue the species. We've already talked about how dopamine neurons react to disappointment. Chapter 4, Probability Weighting. Probability weighting is the other key concept behind prospect theory, so it's important that we explore it as much as we explored reference dependence in our understanding of behavioral economics. Probability weighting describes the biases people hold when deciding the probability of things that are going to happen. These are behind why we often make mistakes when guessing probability of events. Probability is defined as the likelihood that something, which must be a definite thing, will occur. We describe it using either percentages or frequency, which will always correspond fractionally. If you make a basket in basketball 80% of the time, you make it an average of 4 out of 5 times. These descriptions are both quantitative. They turn likelihood into numerical chances. Probability, because it is a fraction, will always be between 0 and 1, which represents impossible and certain cases, respectively. Probability theory describes probability with mathematical formulas and is used in every quantitatively oriented field, including economics and statistics. Probability helps us describe the frequency of future events and even the outcomes of complex systems, which tend to behave in fairly unpredictable ways. Probability can be easy to describe, as in the case of a coin toss. There is a 50% chance that either side will come out on top after the flip. This is an exclusive probability because either one or the other can happen, but not both. However, real-world probabilities are not always so neat. Things like subway times or weather are hard to predict because the probabilities can change so quickly. There are many. Chapter 5, Risk. So far, we've talked about several of the underlying components of human behavior and the theory of behavioral economics. However, we've not talked about a common subject that forms the foundation of everything we've discussed thus far, risk. Some people love risk and some people hate it, but we all have to live with it. This chapter will focus on what risk is, how it works in our lives, and how we can manage it and harness it to benefit us. While the common usage of risk seems to imply a meaning of dangerous, in economics, it simply means the presence of multiple outcomes from a choice that have different values. Another important component of economic risk is whether or not we know the probabilities behind different outcomes, or whether we can estimate these probabilities. If we can know or estimate probabilities, then the choice has risk involved. If we can't, the outcomes have ambiguity, not risk. Risk doesn't have to involve rappelling down the side of a mountain or diving to the bottom of the ocean in a submarine. In fact, it underlies most of what we do, even if our choices can only lead to good or neutral outcomes. People tend to behave in three different ways when making economic decisions: risk-seeking, risk-neutral, or risk-averse. As you might expect, most people favor risk-averse choices, where they choose the more secure, safer option over the riskier one, especially when each outcome has the same expected value. Risk aversion is defined as people's efforts to lower uncertainty in economic decisions. People always try to choose the more known option or to find more information about the things that are uncertain. Chapter 6, Comparison. Recent research has found that our brains construct value itself in a highly subjective way. This value construction happens every day for even the most minor of decisions. Value isn't a stable quantity. Your own value for a given object or experience can change based on your circumstances and reference points. Part of how we construct value is through a theory called constructed preferences. The idea behind this is that our brains assign things subjective value when they need it. Although economists have not accepted this theory, psychologists do believe it has validity. And since behavioral economics has such a large psychological component, it's important to thinking about how our brains make decisions. We construct subjective value by going through something called the decision problem in our heads, which is essentially the process of going through all the separate parts of our memories to make a decision. Naturally, this leads to a large bias in the constructed value. There are also specific biases called decision biases at work during the process. The first decision bias is the decoy effect. The decoy effect happens when we're trying to choose between two options and a third is introduced that we did not choose. The third option can create a bias toward the choice that seems better in comparison to the third decoy option. The decoy effect is commonly used in marketing. If you're trying to choose between a laptop with 50 gigabytes of storage and a more expensive one with 100 gigabytes of storage, the introduction of a 75 gigabit laptop with a more expensive price tag than either other option can guide people toward the 100 gigabyte laptop, which is better than the decoy option in both. Chapter 7, Bounded Rationality. We can make simple decisions based on a simple calculation of benefit versus risk and how we value our time. However, complex decisions can also make evaluating these metrics difficult, which is why we need simpler rules to make them. This idea of using a rule to shorten the process of making a complex decision is called bounded rationality, and it's another major principle of behavioral economics. Bounded rationality has the name it does because it is a term for the limits that keep us from being perfectly rational economic actors. These factors include the limits of our cognition, the time we have to consider our options, and how easy the decision is to make. We can only reach the conclusions that come closest to solving the problem, not the actual perfect solutions. The idea of bounded rationality was conceived by Herbert Simon, who proposed it in response to the popularity of mathematical decision-making models in academic disciplines. It does not contradict the theory that rationality is the brain's way of optimizing benefits and outcomes. Instead, it simply augments this theory to make it more applicable to the real world. Simon wrote that decision-making is like using a pair of scissors where one blade is human cognitive limitations and the other is the structure of our context and surroundings. Essentially, these scissors are a tool that takes cognitive limitations into account and compensates for them with known quantities. The components of bounded rationality, if we think of it as a tool or a workaround, are called limited search and satisficing. These ideas were put forth in Simon's 1955. Chapter 8, Social Decisions. Now that we've explored the processes, psychology, and neuroscience behind decision-making, it's important to address one of the most massive influences on our behavior, social settings. When people interact with another person or with a small group, their decisions change and exhibit interesting changes in behavior. Economists tend to act as if rational actors are acting alone. However, as game theory has explored, this is fundamentally untrue. Simplification of decision-making in social settings is actually better because it allows people to better judge others' actions and get out of their own heads. Game theory was originally invented as a branch of mathematics, and that's still the category to which it belongs. Economists now use game theory extensively in their research, as it is an excellent example of strategic thinking at play in decisions. Games in game theory don't necessarily have to be things like poker. Instead, they're generally some sort of abstract version of a decision-making scenario wherein there are players, choices, and consequences. The most famous example of game theory is the prisoner's dilemma. This is a game where two prisoners are incarcerated for committing a crime together. They are each forced to decide whether to pin the crime on their partner or to refuse to talk. If they both inform on their partner, they get a middling sentence. If they both stay quiet, neither of them will have any evidence against them. If one informs on the other, the one who informs is released, while the one who stayed quiet will go to prison for life. The challenge is to make the choice that will give you the best outcome while taking the other player's action. Conclusion. The aim of this book is to give you a better, more comprehensible understanding of behavioral economics than more academic papers or textbooks can offer. Behavioral economics is a complex field that integrates neuroscience, mathematics, psychology, and economics, so it might seem esoteric to many. However, it has a lot of relevance in our day-to-day lives, from the most minor of choices, which tie will I wear today, to the most serious, which house will I choose to buy? Therefore, it's important for everyone to understand how and why their brains think the way they do, and ultimately, to use this to their benefit in their decision-making. In the first chapter, we discuss the definition of behavioral economics and rational choice theory, which is the baseline from which economists study human behavior. While rational choice theory is useful in constructing mathematical economic models, it is a fairly poor model for real human behavior. Behavioral economics was invented to address these gaps and to explain more of what people decide in real life as opposed to how they act on paper. In the second and third chapters, we explored reference dependence in detail. Reference dependence is one of the core ideas behind behavioral economics theory and posits that people make decisions based on information that they already have. We discuss the influence of dopamine and how our brains are wired to process dopamine as a function of whether our expectations were met instead of just whether something made us happy. Dopamine not only makes us chase the high of a happy surprise, which is what triggers dopamine-fed neurons the most, but it also makes us get attached. This has been Outsmart Your Brain, written by Stephen Schuster, narrated by Russell Newton. Copyright 2019 by Stephen Schuster. Production copyright by Stephen Schuster. Please be sure to visit Amazon.com or Audible.com for more information on this book and the author. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Overwork Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.